everybody. Welcome back to Bootstrap Web. I'm Jordan. Brian, how are you, my man?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, good to be back on.
Excellent. Yeah, so we've got mostly Brian topics because I'm boring. I was in New York all last week with family. I had a pretty interesting experience in New York. I'm not going to talk about getting sick. While in New York, one of the big realizations I had was that I'm at a new level of being unnecessary. I'm genuinely not necessary to the day-to-day.
That is a great feeling.
Which is awesome.
You know, it's beautiful when like you've been at that level for a while, but you haven't really put it to the test until you go on a trip. You
know? Yes. So that's when it gets kind of exposed, whether it's real or not. So I was very happy. I went there. I was like, okay, I'm going to do some work and I'll be in touch and I'll be on Slack. And then I got there and I was like, I don't need to do anything. I'm just being annoying if I'm doing that because they're just doing their thing, which felt great. And at the same time, it gave me a bit of like an existential crisis on like, well, what am I supposed to be doing? Where can I actually add value and move things forward? And it took me all week to kind of roll through that. But anyway, back in Portland this week, happy to be back. How about you? How has your past week been?
Pretty good. You know, so like right now we're recording this. So this is the Friday before Thanksgiving. This episode will drop, I think, on Thanksgiving. So tomorrow is Black Friday. This month, all of November, you know, what I have on my list here for the show is just, I've been shipping a lot of little things, like a long list of little things that have been sort of piling up, sort of like I've been putting them off, things that I need to get going, like something happened in November where I was just like, I need to get this to-do list done so that I can start to really do some new good work. You know, like one of those things is sort of time sensitive, which is my annual, you know, lining up of the productized Black Friday sale. It's really the only time every year that I actually run a big promotional sale for productized. And I mean, you know, it's historically done pretty well around Black Friday, but I've talked about this before. Like, I always have this feeling of like, you know what? I don't know. This is the year where it's just going to kind of fall flat. Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel it this year. And then, you know, it does pretty well. So we'll see. Really, for the last couple of years, it's really just been a matter of like lining up a couple of broadcast emails. And I'm not even, I wrote these emails like 3 years ago. I don't even really write them again anymore. It's just about like less than an hour of work to get that lined up. So I needed to get that done. And then, oh, you know what? I just realized we didn't talk on the podcast since I launched the kits feature, which is like process templates in Process Kit. I think I did that like the first week of November. That's a big one that, you know, so the strategy, we've talked about it before. A lot of people sort of recommend it. And it's like, yeah, this is what I've been thinking for a long time, which is like, offer ready-made process templates that anyone can download and use in Process Kit for like the most common use cases. So I created like five of them, like a new customer onboarding process, a blog article production process, a podcast production process. There's like a sales consultation process thing in there. This strategy is like it kind of attacks a bunch of different things, like killing a bunch of birds with the same rock. What is it?
Stoned.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I can't think today. So the idea is, number one, to help new customers onboard easier, to give them. And so we're calling them like kits because it's the process template plus a custom project type plus some custom fields, all configured, like ready made, and it's built into the app now. So when you're in there, you can just like one, like go through our little library and like one click and like set your account up just like that.
Yeah. I don't know if that was all planned out, but the language with kits did work out nicely.
Yeah. I was like thinking about it because I was like, I knew I needed to include all these other things besides the process itself. And I was like, what do we call this? It's a kit. Hey, that works. You know,
very nice. I like it. And I have an obsession with template marketing. And so do you have some ideas?
Well, that's the other piece of this. Yeah. Okay, so cool. I did write basically five long blog articles that I posted on the website, and it's linked up from the homepage of processkit.com. So every one of these has like a long guide, like the guide to new customer onboarding. And the call to action is to sign up for a trial so that you can go use our customer onboarding process in your Process Kit account. So, and that's all like SEO optimized and all that. So there's that that piece of it too. It was something that I had been planning for a long time. First, we actually built the ability to create these kits in ProcessKit and import them probably 2 months ago. But then I shipped that feature, but I hadn't even announced it because I didn't have any kits or templates ready. You know, it wasn't until like I finally got around to creating them, and they've got like details written into them and like date rules built into them and all these different things.
On the marketing side of the kits, in my head, the ideal would be to provide that as value, but have it be much more valuable when used inside your product.
Yeah, see, that's the tricky part. The thing is that like there's nothing that I can provide as a download to somebody. Like you,
even like a Google Doc version of the kit, where it's like, here's a process you can go off on your own. I love the way that Lead Pages kind of did that, where here you can download an HTML version of this template. Good luck with that. Or you can just upload this template into your account and that's actually usable.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about that, but I didn't want to go and just create like a Google Doc version. I don't think that that would be nearly as valuable, to be honest. It's really about the workflow of like how one step goes to the next and how one step can calculate the date based on the previous one and all that kind of stuff.
So you're showing how that all works, and then you're saying, get this inside the app.
Yeah, like in the article, like the public article, I kind of describe what the key components of a good new customer onboarding process are without actually saying step one, do this, step two, do that. It's just like, in phase one, you're going to want to take care of these things. Phase two, you'll want to take care of these sorts of things. And then there's like a section about like, and you might customize it to your needs in these different ways if you're in this scenario or that scenario. And like, it's really just about how you might use this process. And then to really start using it, you sign up for the trial.
Okay. I like it. I'm curious if we can go back to my side of things for a second. One of the topics I want to talk about today was consumer marketing approaches to B2B scenarios. All right. So what I mean by that is I've been looking at branding from a consumer point of view, like when you're selling B2C, right? A lot of that's what our merchants, our customers do. And so what I've seen is the best ones, they don't market their product, they market the result, right? If you're selling skin cream, you don't want to talk about the viscosity of the cream and the ingredients nearly as much as you want to talk about that you're going to feel great about yourself when you walk out of the house, your skin's going to glow, you're going to get compliments, you're going to feel amazing. And then our product and its features help you go from where you are now to getting that feeling. You know, so I've been thinking a lot about this because we're redoing our marketing site now. We are coming up across these questions of what do we want to talk about? Are we talking about the features, the benefits, or the actual desired result, right? So our merchants, if we look at it from like the first level point of view, it's they want to be able to do post-purchase upsells. If we look at it from the second level, it's like they want a higher average order value and lifetime value and conversion rate so that they get a better return on ad spend. But then if we look at it at that next level, which is the way a B2C company would look at it, it would be use our checkout to delight your customers so that the people buying your product come away from the shopping experience loving you. Because that's what our merchants actually want. The best ones.
I get that it's all about really resonating at a very deep level with your ideal target customer and all that. You know, if you go back to the other side of the coin, the B2B side of that SaaS.
Right.
I think when it comes to the website, in most cases, I'm not going to say all, but most, that level one is really where you want to catch them, I think. Like they're probably searching for post-purchase upsells. You know, and so if they land on the site that says this is the solution for post-purchase upsells, like you could stop your search now. You've just found it, you know.
I hear you. And that has been what we've been going according to up until now. What we're challenging ourselves now, you know, now's the time to do it. We're redoing the marketing site. Now you got to look at the positioning and the copy and what are you going to show, what screenshots and so on. We're challenging ourselves. And you don't want to get too abstract. You don't want to talk about this product makes you happy. Like that's not what we're talking. We're still talking B2B here. But we're challenging ourselves because a lot of the customers that we really want, the ideal customers, one of their biggest hesitations around our product is how it's going to affect their relationship with their customers. If we just talk about average order value and conversion rate, we're going to be attracting the type of merchant that has historically wanted to use the product but has not turned into a very long-term, very happy customer. Those customers that are happiest for the long term are the ones that use our product in a way to like delight their customers and show them relevant offers and make sure they're not bombarded by overly markety type pages.
That can come into like the actual copywriting, like, you know, the formula where it's like, this is the benefit without the fear of using the typical solution, right? So it's like, this is your post-purchase upsell product without the sleaziness, like,
right,
whatever.
Right, done the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we are right now on it is that the hero section, the top of the homepage, that should be more abstract. Like maybe the copy is more direct, but the featured image itself should not be a screenshot of the app. It should actually be something that represents their shoppers being happy when they use our checkout. And then the rest of the site, screenshots, get down to business. Here's how you do it. Here's why.
So in terms of positioning, do you think about the top competitor or like the alternative solution, even if it's not a competing company, but like is that a big factor in terms of like convert? Because like that was a big one when I was designing the Process Kit site, was like, I know that they are comparing other tools or they're thinking about switching from a tool that they've been using. So I need to play inside that box. And I'm doing the positioning against project management tools and process tools. And I'm saying like, this is the one if you're trying to merge those two things.
I see. So for us, it's just based on the market and whatever else, but competitors is never brought up in the conversation. We don't even remember to ask about it as we're talking about it. And I think it's just a function of partly wanting to be that way, but you know, you can want to be that way, but if you're not in that situation, then you're not being very smart if you're just ignoring it out of principle. I think in our situation, it's really very few competitors. It's just very few competitors. And we want it to be so obvious for our ideal customer. We actually think it's already obvious. If you go to one of our competitors' websites and it's like pretty gimmicky looking and it's $39 a month, like you're not going to put your $20 million a year business on that. So it's almost like we shouldn't even look at that and just see what should we do for our ideal customer. So when they get there, they're going to be like, well, this is obviously the right thing for me.
Yeah. Give that like credibility.
Yeah. So the reason that this part of the conversation got sparked is because I was curious about the blog post that you're writing about these kits.
Yeah. I don't actually call, they're just like blog posts. It's not an actual blog. It's just it's like processkit.com/templates or something. And it's just a couple of pages about it.
Right. So forget posts, whatever it is. I mean, what do they call these days? Articles, pages, page. So this page, are you talking about like the dream? Like you can have your company running more efficiently in this way?
I did write headlines for each one. So like there's like a main index page that lists them, and like the title on that page is like business process templates. And this is just very SEO optimized. But then when you click into a single one, all right, so like the headline on this one is like how to craft a better new customer onboarding process. The other one is implement a predictable sales and consultation process. Sustain your content marketing with this blog post process. You know, I wrote those headlines like trying to say like this is the problem that having a process like this will solve, but very much, and like I put the blog post process in bold to, because like the goal is like you're searching for a blog post process and you land on this page. And then like the sub headline is like a guide and process template kit to run your blog content production, publishing and promotion process. and then like a 1500 word article all about that. And there's, you know, and then there's like a big call to action in there. So I don't know. I mean, it launched 2 weeks or so ago. I'll see how it works. So I've got a number of other things that I shipped this week, but actually something else just came to mind. Speaking of like marketing, is like, I am starting to notice, like, now that it's quote unquote launched, now that the website is out there and it has already been on Product Hunt like a couple of weeks ago, I'm getting like real leads on the site. Now it's like clearly a mix of people who are still trickling in from my audience, or they've been sitting on the early access list for a while, and then a couple of them are converting this month. But there's a lot of new trialers coming to the site who are strangers, and they land on the site and they're just starting a trial. And yesterday I had a call with one of them. So a small percentage of them will go out of their way to book a demo call with me. There's a little link to do that.
And they don't have to.
They don't have to.
So they're really going out of the way saying, I want to talk more.
Yeah, this guy did yesterday.
I think it's a good sign.
Yeah. So I'm doing like one or two of these calls every week, but almost all of them are with people on my audience. So like what usually happens is somebody started a trial, they start using it, then they have a question or they ask for a trial extension and I give them that. And then when I do, I'm like, hey, I'd love to hop on a call and talk through, like, understand your workflow some more. So I do that like once or twice a week. But those are people in my audience, or no, those are just people who, it's just more casual. I'm just treating it like a research.
It's more familiar.
Yeah, right. And it's a research conversation. Like, tell me what tools you've been using. What does your workflow look like? What are your objections to this? Like, how can I make process get better and all that? But this guy yesterday is just a stranger. He doesn't even know that Process Kit is brand new. He's like from a pretty large organization, and he's not like the head of it. He's like head of some department, and he's looking for a tool for, he was like, I don't know. I was like, I found Process Kit from like searching around. I think somebody mentioned it on Twitter or something. And
booked
this call, and it didn't go badly. Like, it went fine, but I just felt like I was not prepared for like a legit like demo call.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Like, I went through my normal thing of where I just ask a lot of questions and I try to understand the customer as much as I can. And I showed him the tool and whatnot, but I don't know. It was just like, I could tell he's done many of these demos with other companies before. Like, he was kind of going through his routine of like, all right, let me get a demo from this tool and let me get a demo from that tool. And I have not optimized my sales process at all.
Right, because he's really comparing, and you want to do the sales thing. You want to see what are the pain points, what are the needs, match up your features with those, kind of really do it.
Yeah, it's so weird because it's like with audience ops, I do the sales, and it's like I literally do those calls like in my sleep at this point. Like, it's just completely dialed in the whole
thing. Right. It's like this podcast.
yeah, pretty much. But Process Kit is still so new that I'm like kind of winging it on every one of these calls. And, you know, it's just something that sort of like hit me yesterday is like, oh, there's people who are brand new who are just landing on it now. And I need to really dial that in.
Can you put a finger on why that's happening now? Is it just a matter of being in the market with the site launched and starting to get some SEO? Is it something that you're doing other than that?
I mean, it's all very new. Like, this is all happening like within just this month. So remains to be seen. But I mean, number one, there's still some effects coming off of the Product Hunt launch. I was sitting on the front page for like 3 days there. So that brought a lot of traffic.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then I think launching the templates is probably bringing in some traffic. And so I talked about how I have that form that asks people like right before they start a trial a couple of questions, and I read every one of those. And, you know, a few people are writing in like Google search, or a friend told me about it, or a lot of them are kind of vague too. They're like, I found your website. It's like, okay, thank you.
True.
I know you found it on the website.
Yes.
So yeah, so like that was just interesting. It just kind of, you know, reminds me of like how much more work I have to do on just dialing in that sales process, I think.
Okay. Do you like the idea of that, of doing sales calls like that? Would you rather be more hands off? Or, I mean, look,
I'm not really trying to be more hands off, although there is like 90% of the people signing up. It is a hands off trial sign up process right now.
Yeah, it's
I'm not against it. I love talking to customers, to be honest.
Right. I was going to say it's also at the stage where you don't really know what business you're in yet. You know what I mean by that? Like, it might turn into the fact that you're really going for, you know, 20, 30 person teams, and those are going to require a conversation and a relationship.
Yeah. And I'm not against that at all. I mean,
yeah. Oh, I think that would be really healthy.
So it is converting customers, but it's still obviously a very low conversion rate. And so it's just like, what are all the things that I need to do to get that conversion rate up? And I did launch a welcome video so that new customers have something to like guide them, or like a quick start tutorial kind of thing. I've got some emails, but at some point I'm going to have to put some more work into what happens during the trial to get somebody from trial to paid, you know?
And right now, between new trials and trial to paid conversion, like which one's hotter, right? Which one would have a bigger impact to work on?
I feel like now that I've launched the site and I did a hit list of things to do around the launch, I could talk about that I just got done this month. Like, the next thing is to start to do like real marketing, like drive more traffic, and work on that trial to paid conversion rate. But I think it's getting a handful of trial signups every day right now. So I'm not like super pained with trying to get trials. It's more about getting more customers converted, I think. And it's also like, there's a lot of people who are converting, I'm finding like they started a trial months ago and then they came back to convert. I think there's a lot of people who like tried it months ago and then they kept up with my updates about the new features and then they came back around, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking at the page now. Business process templates.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, I mean, the other things that I got done, these were just hanging around on my to-do list that I knew I needed to do at some point and I just wanted to get them over with. So, like, one was I updated my Productize course to include Process Kit. So, like, in there's like three lessons that are all about building processes, and they were mostly showing like Google Docs and stuff like that. And so I added like a short little video to the beginning of three of those to say like, hey, this is Brian from the future, just letting you know that there's a new tool now that you can check out. It's called Process Kit.
I like that.
And I give those students like an extended trial and stuff like that. So I promote that. And then I added an email to my personal newsletter automation workflow. If you get onto my newsletter list, like every 2 months or so, I send an email just to let you know about one of my products. So there's one about Sunrise KPI, there's one about Audience Ops, and now there's finally one about Process Kit, you know, because, you know, it's possible that they get on there and they haven't actually heard that yet, believe it or not, because people come in from different ways. I finally redirected opscalendar.com to processkit.com. That's been something I've been meaning to do for a while. I shut down Ops Calendar a few months ago in terms of like taking new signups and everything. And I was telling those people, go to Process Kit. But now, because that got a little bit of traffic, organic traffic every month. So I wanted to get that traffic pointed to Process Kit. So that's done. And I've been working on some t-shirts and hats, actually, for Process Kit. So,
oh, nice. Some swag.
Yep.
Nice, man. That's kind of a...
I'm actually having a hard time with it. I like, you can't see it. I've gone through like three or four different samples. It didn't print right. The color was off. The shirt material was not right. So hopefully the next one that comes is going to be the one. And once that's all dialed in, I'll start getting them out there.
Nice, man. Yeah, we're doing that. I think I told you about the Choosy Little Bastards t-shirt.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's actually kind of tough startup swag. You don't want to spend too much on it, but you don't want to go cheap. You do want it to be
something like wearable.
Something you actually wear.
Yeah.
I wear a few. I wear Stripes. I wear Natural Stacks, which is one of our customers, which has just the most comfortable, perfect t-shirt.
Yeah. I've got a bunch. Like, really, like almost all the t-shirts I wear these days are like swag from other companies. So like,
you don't prefer the highly uncomfortable J. Crew button-down uniform that I wear 7 days a week.
It's so weird, man. Like, I'm literally sitting in my sweatpants and like sweatshirt and like, this is how I live here. It's like my whole life, every day I'm just in like, I'm wearing slippers and a sweatshirt.
Nice. You know?
And this is like, this is how I drop off my daughter at school. Like the people around there must think I'm a total bum. Like I don't shave. I got my sweatshirt and all this. Like
maybe 10 years ago, that was the bum. These days, I think people look at that and go, that guy's got it right.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. The Slovenian office is being renovated right now for like a week. I don't know, something with the floor. So they're all working remotely. And they were like, man, we don't like working remotely as much as being in the office. And I was like, you know what I do? I get dressed. I put on a button down no matter what. They just looked at me and started laughing, all of them. Like, no. hard no. Me and my button down on my couch, that's not going to happen. Cool. So the other thing I want to bring up today, and then I really don't have much else. Our boy DHH, he's been on fire lately.
He has.
Homie has opinions.
Oh, man.
So he wrote a quick blog post and quoted it in a tweet. And I think this is like the single most important thing to figure out.
Which DHH rant are we talking about? Because there's like five of them from the past week.
We're talking startups. It's not about like who knows what he's into these days. he's definitely fighting for the good of the world. Right. mostly right. Although I don't agree with the whole Apple Card thing kind of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Come on. Okay, so look, here's what he wrote in the tweet. Why isn't there a market for selling a minority stake of your profitable tech company to people who'd be happy to be paid back in distributions and dividends rather than capital gains? It seems like a glaring gap in the market, right? So he's referring to capital gains being like the only way we want to get paid back is when there's an acquisition. So he's saying, why isn't there a market for that? I think this is the single most critical thing to figure out if we want to change the strange situation we're in now between bootstrap or all in on VC. Because there is – if you go the bootstrap route or the fund strap or anything other than the venture route, what you get into is a situation that I'm in right now. The situation that I'm in right now is that I have – a moderately successful software company, and I'm kind of stuck. All of my net worth is in equity that isn't really liquid. I don't want to sell the company. I'm happy. I like doing this. It's not even near its like fruition, like where it really should be. But now the only option to get liquidity, to get some of this risk off the table, is either going the venture route with some secondary, right? Meaning like let's raise $20 million and I get to keep two of them. And then you're running a very different company, right? Now you're trying to swing for the fences and everything's different.
And there was like the DHH rant on 1Password raising $200 million, you know?
That's right. So 1Password did what I think is a very reasonable thing to do right now. If you have a very successful company, all of your net worth is tied up in it. You don't want to sell it. What you can do is sell a minority stake to investors the way 1Password did. They raised $200 million for a minority stake in the company. They still run their own company. Who knows what provisions are in the agreements, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, the guy, did you see the Medium post that the founder wrote?
I did.
I read that yesterday.
Yeah, very thoughtful, right? He's obviously a DHH fan and I think he did what is reasonable. If you're sitting there and someone is offering you to take $50 million off the table, change not just your family, literally like generations of your family forever, and you want to do it right now, the only way to do it is to go public, which is a nightmare of a different sort, or do what they did, which is sell a piece of the company. Now, the issue, what DHH is talking about, is that the investors that you just raised money from that let you take money off the table, they are not interested in dividends and distributions. They are interested in capital gains through acquisition or IPO. And now you have fundamentally changed the nature of the company that you've been building for the past 10 years. For me, this is the debate. So Rob Walling was in that debate and Travis Jameson is in that debate. And
it's weird. I didn't see that that tweet from DHH about that.
I'll post it to you and we can post it.
Yeah.
But this is it, man. This is the thing to figure out. And
I was wondering, like where does the fund strapped, the tiny seeds, the earnests, like where do they fit into all that? Like, isn't that sort of like that space that they're playing in?
They are playing in the same space, but they are the early money. They are the here's 100, 200K to get profitable. So
there's like another level up that's not quite VC world, but they're above the angel or the bootstrap.
Exactly right. So Tiny Seed and Earnest give you money to grow your company to get to profitability, but in a way that doesn't force you into the VC treadmill. The issue is, what happens once you get profitable? What happens when you're making $2, $3, $4, $10 million a year and you get into this very strange spot? Really what DHH is saying is there's money in there for investors, but how come there's no market that wants access to that money? Is it a risk thing? Is it just like what? Because if that part gets figured out, and as a founder, you see getting to $5 million a year as success, not just for the company, but also personally. Like, you can achieve a lot of your dreams by getting a company to $5 million and having a valuation of, call it 25, and selling a $5 million stake. Then people won't be nearly as attracted as swinging for the fences and raising money from VCs.
I don't know how I'm not into this as much as you are, but it seems like if there's a fewer number of investors for a company of that size, like then you're talking about the investors who have a ton of money and they're really only interested in those big IPO acquisition exits. And so it seems like the way that this would work would be if it's a group, like a large group of investors and who, like a fund that invests into these companies at that stage, so that people with a little bit of money can benefit. And
yeah, I don't know if that's right, because most investors would be very, very happy with 20% a year. Right, but VC is not after 20%. It's not because the VCs are bad people. That's literally the nature of the asset class. The asset class is, we're an insurance company and we invest $10 billion a year, and $100 million of that we want to put onto very risky assets, and very risky assets need to return 10x or they're pointless. And so when we give that to as a general partner and we give it to the LPs who actually manage the fund, I might have gotten that reversed, then we expect them to put really risky bets on. That's why we're giving them the money. That's why this money is allocated in that direction. But if you ask the rest of the market, 20% is ridiculous. Nobody gets 20%. So if you can create a fund that invests in businesses in this way, and this is, if you read all the comments, this is actively happening. So there are investors out there that are starting to get wind of this and say, look, we don't want to run the company and we don't want you to swing for the fences. We want you to continue growing the company. We just want to participate in some of the financial upside. In exchange, we'll give the company some fuel and we'll let you take some money off the table. So if someone came to me right now and said, let's raise $25 million and swing for the fences, that is extremely risky to me personally, because it might go to zero. And I just banged my face up against the wall for 5 years. So if the prospect of something going to zero, I don't care to have the headlines in TechCrunch. What about me personally? That's what you really care about. Now, if someone came to me and said, how about we raise $10 million, you take $2 million off the table, you continue to run the company pretty much the same way you're doing, you just own less of the upside now. And that is far more attractive than the alternative. It's just that the market isn't quite there, but I think this is it.
Reading the post from the 1Password founder about the why they raised, I mean, you know, you don't know all the details behind the scenes or anything, but like what he was sort of getting at was like, look, like we've been profitable, you know, 1Password has been profitable, but we couldn't really do all the things that we wanted to do, or we're constantly trying to play catch up to the growth. We were constantly growing and we couldn't grow the team and the leadership fast enough. And that apparently was sort of the driving factor behind, obviously to take some money off the table, but also to have the resources and to be able to hire faster and not have to, you know, feel like you're behind all the time when you are a profitable company.
You know? Right, because you could be making $20 million a year, but profitable by $500K because you keep hiring people and growing and opening new offices and doing what you think is right for the business. So you could turn into Rand Fishkin running Moz, making $20 million a year, and him not really making any of it. That's a tough spot. This is like one of my passions. I keep talking about it forever. So I think we should cut it off there before I get into the Toronto Stock Exchange and Australian Stock Exchange and digital security tokens and whatever else. That's another conversation. Yeah, but that that's my topic over there.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah, the only other thing I have here is last week, one of the last things that I did on Process Kit was I built myself a little metrics dashboard in the back end, my personal admin back end in Process Kit, which gives me all the key metrics that I need that I've been pulling manually month to month. But now that I have like real stats coming in, I wanted to get a better handle on it. So, you know, I've got like revenue stuff like MRR, you know, churn, current trialing, trial to paid conversion. And then it also lists out like the number of people who I consider to be active trialers or like there's a semi-active and a very active trialer. And I could actually list out those accounts and reach out to them. It's got like the churn rate, it's got lifetime value, like all that kind of stuff. And like I could have used like a Profitwell or one of those, but it didn't. That actually is really more complicated and doesn't give me all those metrics that I actually needed to pull straight from the database from Process Kit. Like it was actually easier for me to take one day of work to make one view in the app that shows me how many people are currently trialing, you know, how many people converted this month compared to last month. And the way that my billing is set up with like a base plan plus a per user plan, they're actually subscribed to like two subscriptions in that sense. So a Profitwell would count that as like two subscriptions. And if they downgrade, then they can't count as a churn. And we have like no credit card up front, so it wouldn't count the trial metric. So I needed a custom thing. I built that in a day on Process Kit. And so now in these days leading up to Thanksgiving, I'm actually took a few days to work on Sunrise KPI again, which I hadn't really touched, you know, for most of the year. There's like two or three features that I'm trying to build. One that I'm done now, and then like one more that I'm doing next week. Like Sunrise was always good at going and getting a number, like the current metric from any of these tools, Google Analytics, Stripe, Drip, whatever you have.
Right, just surfacing them.
Yeah, but it couldn't say how much revenue do we have in the month of November so far compared to October. You know, give me the month to date or the quarter to date or the year to date. So I added that ability to be able to like tally up like from the first of the month to the current compared to the last month. And are you on pace to beat last month or not?
So Sunrise is an in-house app that you use personally that you happen to have a marketing site and the ability to sign up for.
Yeah, basically.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. I can't tell you how amazing it is to be able to build things in Rails. I mean, it's like if I want something like this metrics dashboard that I just built in Process Kit was like, dude, in all my other businesses, Audience Ops, Restaurant Engine, I spent years like toiling away in like spreadsheets and Zapier and Stripe and Profitwell and this and that and like hooking them together. And then like every 4 months they would like break down because something went wrong and the data was never accurate. And, you know, and then dealing with the acquisition of Restaurant Engine and those kind of conversations, like when you're starting to do due diligence on metrics from last year, the year before, like what happened in this month to that month, like I was like, I don't know, my Zapier thing broke. So there's a black hole in that month. Like there's a lot of like, oh, you should just use this tool or that tool for that. But like that actually, I've seen firsthand how much of a pain that causes for yourself down the road when you can't go back into the history and know for sure these were the metrics on these days in history.
It is strange these days that software is amazing and sucks at the same time.
For things like this, like one off-the-shelf software does not solve the whole problem. You always need some element of a custom implementation
or a combination.
Yeah. And so actually what I'm doing, and I've had some requests for this from Sunrise users, is like, great, it can pull from Google Analytics, it could pull from Stripe, it could pull from Drip or ConvertKit or whatever. But they're like, you know what? I run an app. I just want to send my metrics from my app to Sunrise and get those into the reports. So I'm building the ability to just connect to your own app's API and so basically I'm going to use Sunrise to pull from my Process Kit app's API to get my numbers into my Sunrise reports. And building that ability for other customers to be able to do that too. I know that sounds kind of confusing. It's like, all right, I built it in Process Kit and in Sunrise. So the difference is the Process Kit dashboard only gives me the current metrics as of right now, like this moment. Like, show me what the database shows right now in terms of current trialers, current paying customers, and stuff like that. What Sunrise does is it gets those numbers and then it takes a daily snapshot, and it keeps a whole history of those snapshots. And then every day or whenever I want my reports, it sends me those numbers. But at any time, I can go in and see what were the metrics back in January of 2018, and, mm-hmm. and I can see that. You know,
cool. So you have a coding hobby on the side.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's kind of nice. All right. If you're looking for something like clever for me to say at this point, I got nothing.
Got nothing. All right. Well, I think that good point to wrap it up then.
Yeah, it's Friday. We're not going to talk to all you fine folks out there before Thanksgiving. We all have a lot to be grateful for. So enjoy Thanksgiving with the families. It's the best holiday, man. It's just food.
It's great.
No presents. No nothing. No politics, definitely no politics, absolutely no politics.
Yeah, we steer clear of that.
Yeah. Cool. Brian, I am grateful for this podcast and for you, my man.
Hey, me too, buddy. Yeah, grateful for you and all you guys and girls listening to this. It's always good. So we'll be back in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you. Talk soon.